in all, it made a very useful outfit, especially when covered by the officer's trench coat, a heavy belted raincoat with a warm, removable wool liner, which could even pinch hit as a bathrobe. Now back to the hotel, the Royal Monceau. On my first morning in Paris, we all starting at an early hour after breakfast in the big dining room, which was, for the most part, a Navy mess, with some Army officers using it. We walked up to the headquarters of the mission, which was known as the Alsace Mission, usually spelled in capitals, A-L-S-O-S. At the time, I did not know it, but I learned many months later that the name Alsace was a pun concocted by someone who remembered more of his Greek than I did, a pun on the name of General Groves, the commanding officer of the Manhattan Project. The Greek word for is Alsace. The office, which was on a street just the other side of the Arc de Triomphe, was five flights up in an apartment house which had been converted on our floor to a series of offices. Here we worked on the papers that had been gathered by earlier arrivals. This was a matter of sorting through vast numbers of documents of all kinds, correspondence, business papers, occasional scientific papers which had been picked up, but particularly correspondence and travel requisitions and the like, which had been found here and there. Much was to be learned, though however laboriously, by the careful scanning of these many papers.
Now give me this outline. Dining room, first breakfast, Marine, Lieutenant Colonel OSS. Later, Coward, Lindbergh. Youthful waiters, worn metal dishes, food unimproved by chefs, walk past tomb of unknown soldier, salute to AL office, five flights of marble stairs, parades to tomb Sunday afternoons, wood-burning cars, FFI, Poudrie Nationale.
Is it running?
Now, let's...
life insurance policy. As a civilian, I was not eligible for GI insurance or its equivalent, and American insurance companies regarded me as a poor risk because they offered no policy. The solution was to take a policy with Lloyd's of London. This I had always regarded as the insurer of large ships for whose loss a bell was always tolled. The fact that they were willing to insure me, as they did, gave me a very considerable sense of importance, for it put me right up there with ocean liners. When I paid a premium on my life policy, my importance to society or the risk of my coming trip was greatly enhanced, in my opinion. Breakfast at the Royal Marceau was in the agreeable company of a Marine Lieutenant Colonel who had arrived by parachute several months before on a mission for the OSS. In general, there were assorted Army and Navy officers with an occasional civilian. Later, I recognized Charles Lindbergh, who I believe was a colonel in the Air Force Reserve at that time. Noel Coward showed up in civilian clothes, as I recall it. I learned later, much later, that he had performed important intelligence work during the war. Theatrical people might well have been there, as Paris was then a place for officers and enlisted men to spend their leave. And a good deal of theatrical entertainment was provided. Indeed, I recall seeing the Lunts in Shaw's Arms and the Man, and a great variety of entertainment was available.
Repeat.
The spacious dining room of the hotel was that of a great Paris luxury hotel. The waiters were for the most part boys in their teens, mostly low teens, wearing old black waiters' clothes, probably inherited or borrowed from former waiters. The food was served in battered metal dishes. It was perfectly adequate, but the cooks, whether Army, Navy, or luxury hotel chefs, had done little to improve the adequate but undistinguished food furnished by the quartermaster. Later, when we were in the field, it was possible to get much better food cooked by local farmers' wives or just the women of the country. New paragraph. I have mentioned that we walked past the tomb of the unknown soldier at the Arc de Triomphe en route to our office. Everyone in uniform was expected to salute when passing this tomb, and the performance of the Alsace scientists in this regard was not viewed favorably by the military men who accompanied them. I usually got by because I had been a lieutenant in the chemical warfare service in the First World War, but I was a bit rusty. When we got to the office, if the elevator was working, we went up to the fifth floor in luxury. If it was not working, a characteristic of French elevators, we climbed five flights of marble stairs, which usually had at least one woman on her knees cleaning the marble treads with a mop or dirty rag. On the streets, one encountered a great many men in uniform, for the most part American uniforms, with occasional British uniforms. The traffic was light, but many of the cars were wood burning. That is, instead of gasoline, they used little cubes of wood, which were fed into a suitable chamber and underwent combustion in such a way as to produce gas capable of propelling the car. Correction, partial combustion. The large cylinders of the wood-burning equipment added a great deal of weight to the car, and I was told the cost represented a considerable fraction of the cost of the car. There were a few cars driving at high speed with young Frenchmen in them, often marked with FFI, which indicated that they belonged to the Free French of the interior. These young men were somewhat reminiscent in their bearing of the young brown-shirted Nazis that I had seen in Munich in 1933 when the Nazis had just taken over. Transportation by the Paris subway, the metro, was excellent. Also, it was free to Americans in uniform. A few Americans claimed that the atmosphere in the subway suffered from the general lack of soap in the country, but I did not notice anything wrong. The general attitude of the French, those one encountered in the street, seemed more friendly than in past years when I had visited the city as a tourist. This might well be, as the French of those earlier days tolerated tourists very largely as a source of income, otherwise deploring them. There were frequent patriotic displays in the form of processions of men, mostly older men, but many appearing perfectly healthy. Parades to the tomb of the unknown soldier. The numbers involved were often small. The larger ones involving 100 or two normally involved a brass band. One of my Alsace colleagues, Professor E.C. Kemble, chairman of the physics department at Harvard, wanted to improve his German. In some way, he located a man, a chemical engineer, who had German origins, although he had been located at various points in Europe, and at the moment was located in the Paris jail as a prisoner. Kendall had arranged for him to be brought by an Alsace jeep to our office to give German lessons. I was asked to join by Kemble to join him in taking the lessons, which I was glad to do, except for the fact that I expected to be sent forward at any minute. I told Kemble this, but he said, come along anyway. And I had one joint lesson with Kemble. Oddly enough, it was the best taught language lesson that I've ever had. An hour under this chap out of the Paris jail did a great deal to brush up my slightly rusty German. However, as I had expected, my orders to go to the front came before I could have even one more lesson. Another colleague was Louis Fieser, F-I-E-S-E-R, professor of organic chemistry at Harvard and one of the leading organic chemists of the United States. He had carried out very important investigations on incendiaries and was sent over to investigate German work on incendiaries. His investigation started at the Poudrerie Nationale, capital P-O-U-D-E-R-I-E, space, capital N-A-T-I-O-N-A-L-E, in Paris. Fieser asked me to join him in the investigation, and we went out early in the morning to start the job. The Poudrerie Nationale was in a group of buildings, one of which had been the residence of the famous French chemist of the 18th century, Lavoisier, L-A-V-O-I-S-I-E-R, who had been one of the pioneers in the development of chemical science. He had the misfortune to live at the time of the French Revolution, and those in authority concluded that the revolution had no need of chemists. So off came his head. buildings had, of course, been occupied by the German army, where who had used a so-called bomb pit for testing a variety of incendiaries and bombs. Fieser and I, with some assistance, set off one after another of these German devices and watching from the shelter, from a bomb shelter, where view could be had through a narrow slit. The view through the slit could even be observed in reflection in a mirror, so that we could escape possible flying fragments. I'm afraid that this, while a useful process, was thoroughly enjoyed, certainly by me. It was unusual to be able to gather useful information while enjoying something very much like a small boy's celebration of the 4th of July. There were a lot of bombs and flares of various colors, and a lot of noise and smoke resulting from their ignition. Ultimately, one day proved sufficient for the completion of the investigation. While going through the building, one of the buildings, we came on an extraordinary series of murals drawn, painted on the white plaster wall